Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 5, text number 11. Kastripna yattita padho bhidhanat Kastripna shubha suri bi ajmanhat Yakanna nadim purushasya yato Bhapadam geharatim chinati Kas. Oh, actually, it's Ka.
Ka.
Who is that man?
Who is that man?
Tripnuyat. That can be satisfied. Tirthapada.
Whose lotus feet are all places of pilgrimage.
Avidanat. From the talks of. Satreshu, in human society.
Va,
one who is. Suribhi,
by great devotees.
Ijmanat, one who is so worshipped. Ya,
who?
Kananadhim, in the holes of the ears.
Purushasya,
of the man. Yataha,
entering.
Bhava Padam,
that which awards births and deaths.
Giharatim,
family affection.
Chinati,
is cut off.
Translation: who in human society can be satisfied without hearing sufficient talk of the Lord? Whose lotus feet are the sum total of all places of pilgrimage, and who is worshipped by great sages and devotees. Such topics can cut off one's bondage to family affection simply by entering the holes of one's ears. Purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Krishna Katha is so powerful that simply by entering into a person's ear, it can at once give deliverance from the bondage of family affection. Family affection is an illusory manifestation of the external energy, and it is the only impetus for all mundane activities. As long as there is mundane activity and the mind is absorbed in such engagement, one has to undergo the repetition of birth and death in the current material nescience. People are most influenced by the mode of ignorance, and some are influenced by the passionate mode of material nature. And under the spell of these two modes, a living being is actuated by the material conception of life. The mundane qualities do not allow a living entity to understand his real position. The qualities of both ignorance and passion strongly bind one to the illusory bodily conception of life. The best among the fools who are thus deluded are those who engage in altruistic activities under the spell of the material mode of passion. So Prabhupada, in a very gentlemanly way, is saying that all fools, but the best among them, so they get some, feel a little bit proud. It's not much credit being the best among fools, but the best among fools are thus deluded, are those engaged in altruistic activities under the spell of the material mode of passion. So people feel very, very proud of their altruistic activities. activities, but from the devotee's perspective, they're the best of fools. Bhagavad Gita, which is direct Krishna Katha, gives humanity the elementary lesson that the body is perishable and that the consciousness, which is spread throughout the body, is imperishable. So, of course, this is a very nice section of the Srimad Bhagavatam because we happen to be in the Christmas book marathon, which coincides with the advent of the Bhagavad Gita. And as described in various scriptures, if we, on this day, and as Prabhupada gives us the opportunity to expand this, very auspicious period of the year, he expands it right through the whole, Christmas book marathon. But if we discuss among the devotees and the innocent the topics of the Bhagavad Gita, one gets immense spiritual blessings from Krishna. And just to help us in that regard, then Krishna has very carefully orchestrated that we, the beginning, we hear these topics, especially about the Bhagavad Gita and Krishna Katha. And Bhagavad Gita, of course, leads to topics of Srimad Bhagavatam or Krishna Katha. And these verses from 10 to 16, especially for those who, either directly distributing books or, directly serving the devotees who are distributing books, these topics you'll find very, very inspiring, except when I give class. Anyway, but we'll move on. So, Bhagavad Gita, which is direct Krishna Katha, gives humanity the elementary lesson that the body is perishable and that the consciousness which is spread throughout the body is imperishable. So, this elementary lesson about spiritual consciousness is given in Bhagavad Gita. Now, Prabhupada is summarizing because the Bhagavad Gita does go on to divide consciousness in two categories as the supreme consciousness and the many individual living entities. For many people who read the Gita, they may not necessarily understand that higher level that's being explained in the Bhagavad Gita, but at least the elementary level it can be taken. The conscious being, the imperishable self, is eternally existent and cannot be killed under any circumstances, even after the dissolution of the body. Anyone who misunderstands this perishable body to be the self and who works for it in the name of sociology, politics, philanthropy, altruism, nationalism or internationalism under the false plea of the bodily conception of life is certainly a fool and does not know the implications of reality and unreality. There, Srila Prabhupada expands his previous statement about the best among fools. That, one may say, how can you say that, these personalities who engage in, they're usually taken as the best among men, sociology, politics, philanthropy, altruism, nationalism, internationalism, all fools, because they're all in the bodily concept of life. So Srila Prabhupada also put, for instance, many people consider Gandhi a great saintly personality. But Srila Prabhupada would sometimes put him in this category because he preached about nationalism. See, nationalism is in this category of, under the bodily concept of life. And therefore, although people consider, he is one of the greatest thinkers and great minds and Mahatma, he's a great Mahatma, from the Bhagavad Gita's perspective, is foolish. Some of them are above the modes of ignorance and passion and are situated in the mode of goodness, but mundane goodness is always contaminated by tinges of ignorance and passion. Mundane goodness can enlighten one that the body and the self are different, and one in goodness is concerned with the self and not the body. But due to being contaminated, those in mundane goodness cannot understand the real nature of the self as a person. So this is what we're saying, this is where they cannot quite understand the complete philosophy of the Bhagavad Gita sometimes, because if they're still trying to understand things by the speculative process, under the mode of goodness, which is tinged with passion and ignorance. Their impersonal conception of the self as distinct from the body keeps them in the mode of goodness within material nature, and unless they are attracted by Krishna Katha, they will never be liberated from the bondage of material existence. Krishna Katha is the only remedy for all people of the world, because he can situate one in pure consciousness of the self and liberate one from material bondage. To preach Krishna Katha all over the world, as recommended by Lord Chaitanya, is the greatest missionary activity, and all sensible men and women of the world may join in this great movement started by Lord Chaitanya. So here, Prabhupada shows who are the actual Mahatmas, who are actually the intelligent and great personalities, is those who are performing the missionary activity of preaching Krishna Katha all over the world. And, you know, here, this section, as we just, you know, verses 10 to 16, you know, is... Vidura is describing, in effect, in his questions, and he's asking questions to Maitreya, but he's also sort of indicating the way he would like the Krishna Katha to, you know, follow. Vidura, of course, is you know, feeling great separation from Lord Krishna, so in one sense, it is a little difficult to just race into the topics of Lord Krishna directly when one is feeling great separation. So he's sort of, you know, directing Maitreya to speak Krishna Katha, but just sort of easing into the pastimes of Krishna like this. So... But he is mentioning that, you know, this Bhagavad Gita, which was, you know, we're here, it is spoken by, compiled by Srila Vyasadeva, it introduces the elementary topics which should lead one to taking up the process of Krishna Katha. But generally that doesn't happen. And of course, you know, that is our mission within the Krishna Consciousness Movement, not just to distribute books, but to actually encourage, guide, and, you know, implement the process of Krishna Katha for all people within their various homes, that they stay within their particular position. There's no need for them to change their position, but that, you know, they actually take up the process of Krishna Katha, which describes here, as Prabhupada says, it's so powerful that it can, simply by entering into a person's ear, it can at once give deliverance from the bondage of family affection. Now, you'll find very common amongst people, you know, if you ask people generally, you know, have you read Bhagavad Gita? You know, you sort of get a bit of a sly grin, you know, that they're a little bit ashamed that either, you know, they probably haven't, or, you know, they may have read a couple of verses, or perhaps they, you know, read part of it, or maybe they read the whole thing many years ago and then put it down. And they, you know, it's like the business is finished, you know. And of course, as we distribute books and distribute the Bhagavad Gita, we know, and what is being described here, is that's not the business finished. There's an elementary introduction of understanding that should push a person into, you know, this lifelong, unquenchable thirst for Krishna Katha. And now, Krishna Katha, again, in the Bhagavad Gita, oh, can I get a Gita? Is there a Gita in the house? Yes. I think. Because in the Bhagavad Gita, in the 13th chapter, text number 26, it describes that actually the 25 and 26, the whole process of Vedic literatures is meant to bring people to this point of Krishna Katha. To just hear about Krishna. Just to hear. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says this. This Bhakti Yoga has 9 different ways that can be performed by hearing, chanting, remembering, worshipping the lotus feet, worshipping the worship of the Lord, the Archivigraha, offering prayers and offering service and friendship and surrendering everything. But in all of those processes of devotional service begin from hearing. They expand from that. So, especially in the beginning, without hearing from a devotee, it is not possible really to be engaged in devotional service. Until someone actually hears from a devotee, then really they can't engage in devotional service or understand it, or understand the devotee, or understand the Supreme Lord, or anything about it. So therefore Krishna, gives special attention to hearing this aspect of bhakti. And he says, verse 25, he says, chapter 13, verse 25, says, some perceive the super soul within themselves through meditation. So he's summing up in a real quick way all the Vedic processes, volumes and volumes of, processes. He sums them all up real quick. Some perceive the super soul within themselves through meditation, others through the cultivation of knowledge, and still others through working without fruit of results. And then he gets right to the point. Again, there are those who, although not conversant in spiritual knowledge, begin to worship the Supreme Person upon hearing about him from others. Because of their tendency to hear from authorities, they also transcend the path of birth and death. So, these processes of meditation, cultivation of knowledge, and working without fruit of desires can bring one to the point to perceive up to the point of understanding one is a spirit soul, and that there is also as my Mayavadi background, one is a spirit soul, and that also there is a super soul. But at that point, unless one engages in devotional service, it's still possible for the living entity through these other processes to confuse oneself and the super soul as being one, the same. That impersonalism may be there. because it's described in the Vedic literatures and the Bhagavad Gita that within the body there is a knower, the conscious being. So therefore, sometimes the Vedas describe that knower as the super soul. So they're thinking, oh, that's the knower, I'm the knower, so that must be me. And sometimes the literatures and the Bhagavad Gita describes that knower as the jiva. And they confuse the two as one. So therefore, even though they've taken other processes, they still, mental speculation, which is the topmost level of all these processes, they'll only end up with an impersonal understanding of the absolute truth. And this has taken part over many, many, many lifetimes. And yet, someone just hears about, hears Krishna Katha from a devotee, and they immediately transcend the path of birth and death. Or as stated in this verse, they become free from, detached from the, family affection, material affection. Now this is a very interesting thing because it actually proves that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is a person. Right? If you can hear about the transcendental qualities and activities of the Supreme Lord and transcend the path of birth and death, it means that there is some active ingredient within that process that takes you to the transcendental platform and can take you back to Godhead. Now, what is that transcendental ingredient? To clarify that, in the Parikit Maharaj, he asked Sukadeva Goswami this very question, that how is it, if we have a material mind, we have a material body and material senses, how is it that we can use material words, material sounds, and discuss things with material sound vibration and somehow come to the spiritual platform? That's not possible. That's logical. Therefore, it's understood that it's because the personality of Godhead, when we discuss him, his qualities and activities, because he is not material, it purifies the material mind, the senses, the words, and everything. And that proves that actually the Supreme Personality of Godhead is not material, but spiritual. Okay? If you can come to the transcendental platform just by hearing about the Personality of Godhead, it means he must be, his qualities and everything must be transcendental. And that proves that God is a person. So therefore, this hearing process is not just important because it's so easy to perform, and it's something that can be performed in any situation of life, but it's also important because it actually proves the existence of the person I've got it. And therefore, Sukadeva Goswami, knowing that that question was so important, he said, this very question, this wonderful question that's asked by Parikit Maharaj, this was actually discussed. Narada Muni asked the same question. It's such an important question. And therefore, he approached Narayana Rishi, Narayan, the Supreme Person of Godhead himself, in Bhadarika Shram, and he asked him that question. And when Narada Muni asked him that question, Narayana Rishi, he said that question so important that it was discussed even in the higher planetary systems of Janaloka. All the great sages from the universe came and they also discussed that same question. And that was discussed, therefore, on Janaloka by the Kumaras, where one of the Kumaras, I think it was Sanat Kumara, was speaking to the other Kumaras and other various transcendental sages. And he said to them, that question is so important, the answer to that question is so important, that I will tell you the story that answers that question, and that answer comes from the prayers of the personified Vedas, who actually gave the answer to that question when they, at the very beginning of creation, before creation, when they offer prayers to Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, and they awake him from his mystic slumber, so that the process of creation can begin again, which is, of course, where we're up to in the Srimad Bhagavatam here. We're about to hear about Garbhadakshaya Vishnu awakening and the process of creation beginning at that. These prayers by the personified Vedas, they glorify, they show that all the different processes in the Vedas, Karmakanda, Jnanakanda, Upasanakanda, gradually are meant to bring one to the platform of Krishnakatha Bhakti. And by bringing one to that platform of bhakti, the spirit souls in the material world can go back to Godhead. Because that process of hearing and chanting about the name, fame, qualities and activities of the Supreme Lord is not material, but completely transcendental. Because that Supreme Lord, the Super Soul, who's an expansion of Krishna, is distinct from the individual soul in various different ways, which are described here in the Bhagavad Gita, which was also described in the Vedas. In summary, generally people begin, understanding the process of purification by Karmakanda. They perform activities, sometimes to worship the demigods because they have material desires to fulfill. By the worship of those activities, they get what they desire for their, fulfill their material needs. And in this way, they develop, they're following the Vedas in an indirect way. The Vedas are really not saying, come to us for sense gratification. The Vedas are saying, go back to the spiritual world. But they're following the Vedas indirectly, and the fact that they're following the Vedas is what is wanted there. Therefore, the Vedic processes, yes, come. You perform the Vedic activities, and you'll see your desires will be fulfilled nicely. And you'll be, immune to the pernicious effects of karma and sinful activity. So then people believe in it. They take shelter of the Vedas. And gradually they understand that apart from the temporary activities that you can gain through the Vedas, perhaps here, you can also go to heaven and experience a greater standard of material enjoyment. After many, many lifetimes, they think, I go to heaven, I come back. I go to heaven, I come back. And they start to perceive, who is this person who's taken all these different lives? I must be, a permanent person different from the body. And they gradually come to the point of taking up Jnanakanda. What is that transcendental self that seems to be, unchanging despite all the different bodies? I go to the heavenly planets, I come back like that. So then they take to the process of Jnanakanda, and that helps them, as described in the Gita, and that helps them to understand that there is a transcendental self different from the material body. Gradually, through Jnanakanda, they come to understand that also, apart from the individual self, there is a supreme self or the super soul, which is described, Krishna sums up in this Bhagavad Gita, the same chapter, topics which are described in the Upanishads. He summarizes them. Basically, what the Upanishads are teaching at this point is that there is the individual soul and there is a super soul who is maintaining all other individual souls.
and that they are both transcendental. Both of them have nothing to do with the material energy. So in the Gita, Krishna sums up all these Vedic instructions like this. I shall now explain the knowable, knowing which you will taste the eternal. Brahman, the spirit, beginningless and subordinate to me, lies beyond the cause and effect of this material world. Everywhere are his hands and legs, his eyes, heads and faces, and he has ears everywhere. In this way, the super soul exists, pervading everything. So here, the Vedas describe that all living entities from Brahma down to the little ant, they all have senses and they're all part and parcel of the super soul. So the super soul is that all-pervading person who is a source of everyone's senses. We cannot claim that we're all-pervading. Therefore, the distinction is made. How can we say we're the super soul? Are we all-pervading? You know, if someone is, in another part of the temple and they're holding out their hand, here, Ganga, here's a nice, Prashad Gulab Jamun. I cannot eat it. I can't even perceive that is happening. But if you offer something to the super soul, he can accept it from any part of the... People are offering prayers. People offer prayers to the Supreme Lord in all religions. That means he's got ears and he can hear everyone's prayers. Can we understand? We can't, we can barely understand what they are. You know, friends and children are trying to communicate, even when they're talking directly to us. Sometimes, we're standing face to face, having a conversation, we still can't understand what they're trying to say to us. The super soul is hearing the prayers of living entities all over. So there's a difference between us being the all-knowing, all-pervading personality of Godhead and the super soul. So then he says, the super soul is the original source of all senses, yet he is without senses. So he has nothing to do with material senses. He is unattached, although he is the maintainer of all living beings. He transcends the modes of nature, and at the same time, he is the master of all the modes of material nature. So these topics are given, which take many, many, many lifetimes for persons to actually come to that point to even have an interest, let alone understand those topics of the Upanishads, which are, summarized in the Bhagavad Gita. Yet, if a person hears from a devotee, they can immediately understand that. And if they immediately understand that, yes, the super soul is my dear friend, he is with me right now, helping me, and if I want to stop the cycle of birth and death and all the miserable condition and by the grace of the super soul, if I actually take shelter of him, he will allow me to go back to Godhead. So within, 2 seconds, within a few seconds, associating with the devotee, one can understand that very, very simply. And Krishna explains in the Srimad Bhagavatam that one who hears from his devotee, Krishna wants to glorify his devotees. Therefore, when the devotees speak or try to preach Krishna consciousness, Krishna manifests all his potencies, Prabhavishnu, through his devotees. He wants to glorify them, even though he is the one doing so much purification, but he likes to do that. It says here, just to summarize, that such topics can cut off one's bondage to affections, family affections, simply by entering the holes of one's ears. Now, again, in the Bhagavad Gita, we have to clearly understand, in the same chapter, the 13th chapter,
Krishna explains this point also about cutting off material affection. So he describes the process of knowledge, and he says, as for detachment from children, wife and home, it is not meant that one should have no feeling for these. They are natural objects of affection. But when they are not favourable to spiritual progress, then one should not be attached to them. The best process for making the home pleasant is Krishna consciousness. If one is in full Krishna consciousness, he can make his home very happy, because this process of Krishna consciousness is very easy. So he gives four things that you can do, that anyone can do, all over the world. One need only chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Accept the remnants of foodstuffs offered to Krishna. Have some discussion on books like Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. And engage oneself in the deity worship. And of course that means, you know, for Srila Prabhupada, you put a little picture of Prabhupada and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and, you know, offer some incense and some flowers, you know, put that in everyone's home, and that's deity worship. You know, there's several of the temples, as a young devotee in Perth and different places, our deities were a picture of, you know, Radha Krishna, a little picture. You know, we had no deities for many, many, many years. They're our deities. We have a picture of Radha Krishna. We just put a garland, and we chant and offer the prasadam. You know, it's deity worship. The same. And we got the same benefit from worshipping that picture as we're doing here with Radha Krishna. Exact same benefit. As a deity. if one can mould his family life in this way to develop Krishna consciousness following these four principles, then there is no need to change from family life to renounce life. That is very important, because here it's described that one can cut off the bondage to family affection simply by entering the holes of one's ears. That doesn't mean that, you know, we're encouraging people to leave their family or to give up family life. Actually, we're encouraging the opposite. All you have to do is hear and chant wherever you are. You stay in your family life, you stay in your position, you stay in your work, unless it's, you know, particularly sinful. And you just do these four things. If one can mould his family life in this way to develop Krishna consciousness following these four principles, then there is no need to change from family life to renounce life. But if it is not congenial, not favourable for spiritual advancement, then family life should be abandoned. One must sacrifice everything to realise or serve Krishna, just as Arjuna did. Arjuna did not want to kill his family members, but when he understood that these family members were impediments to his Krishna realisation, he accepted the instruction of Krishna and fought and killed them. So, if there's a strong... We're not asking everyone to kill their family members, but don't get any ideas. But we, in Kali Yuga, we, you know, kill the demoniac principle by Krishna consciousness, but sometimes... In, you know, certain circumstances, not that one should, you know, just divorce, you know, that's it, but, you know, one may leave the shelter of one's mother. You know, sometimes you see, you know, people are 30, 40 years old and they're still, mother won't let them leave home. You know, but, you know, so, and not to be just, you know, our whole life is absorbed in just serving various family members, you know. If there are serious impediments, we have to make time to serve Krishna, to hear and chant. So, therefore we see in the Krishna book that when Krishna, he went to see two devotees, he went to see them at the same time. This is how the Supreme Lord, how he's not an individual soul like us. He's all-pervading. And to prove he's all-pervading, he can be everywhere at once. So there was Bahulaspa and there was Shrutadeva, and they both asked him, you please come to our home, you know, you come to my home and, you know, let me serve you. So Krishna, with all his devotees and different sages and Vyasadeva and so many people. And he said, okay. So without either of them knowing, he went to both their homes at the same time with all the sages. You try and understand that. It's just, you know, there's no... Krishna is not only beyond space, or, you know, the Supreme Lord is not only beyond material time, material space. In other words, he can be at two places at the same time with all the same people, but he's also beyond time. You know, you try and figure... So, you know, does that mean that while he's talking to this one, he's also, you know, trying to listen to that one at the same time? That means that someone is constricted by time. Time doesn't play an effect. In other words, he can have just be fully absorbed in those persons with those sages and fully absorbed in the other persons with the other sages. Not like there's a whole bunch of conversations going on in his head, because he's not influenced by time or space. He's completely transcendental. But one was a king who lived in a very opulent place, full of material opulence. You know, all the provisions for sense gratification. And the other one was a simple, you know, brahmana. And Krishna accepted their service equally to show this point. It's not your position as a grihastha, as a brahmachari, brahmacharini, you know, sannyas. That's not the active principle in devotional service. The active principle is hearing and chanting. And therefore, whatever situation we're in, we should always be concentrating on the hearing and chanting. That is the main thing we should do as grihasthas. That is the main thing we should do as brahmacharis, sannyasis, is to hear and chant. That is the active principle of spiritual life. There are so many temporary things. All the other things are temporary. You know, we should be very careful not to be distracted from the eternal benefits of hearing and chanting, which is the active principle which will take one back to Godhead in any position, in any place in life. And if we can teach people that principle, the preaching will be very, very, very easily accepted. If we try to pigeonhole everyone into a slot, you can only be a devotee if you do this, that and the other. You have to give up this and you have to move closer and, you know, you have to do this. If we pigeonhole people, try and put everyone in the same slot, you'll not spread Krishna consciousness. Yeah, a little bit. But by this principle, wherever people are situated, you teach them, you just take up this process of hearing and chanting and you can go back to Godhead. And if you take up that process of hearing and chanting, it is so powerful that it will convince them that God is a person. Without all the philosophy, without millions and millions of lifetimes, they'll just see, it works, God must be a person. So very, very powerful. So here, these verses of Srimad Bhagavatam discussing these points. 8 o'clock, sharp, as Nanda says, I'll leave it there. Maybe we can ask some questions tomorrow to the next speaker. Thank you very much. Have a good marathon. Adi Bo.